Oxford. And what I'm going to talk about is heterotic phenomenology, phenomenology in string theory in general, and why heterotic model building is interesting from the point of view of particle physics. I'm going to talk about why we're interested in this problem, and something called the monad construction of vector bundles, which is hard for algebraic geometry, and I'm going to try and make it not scary. So I'll do my best with this. I'm going to discuss some Calabi-Yau spaces that we're working with, building vector bundles over those spaces, and how this string model will allow us to construct particle spectra and prove some things about low energy supergeometry. I'm going to discuss a new approach to heterotic model building, an algorithmic approach, and I'll say what I mean by that, as well as future directions that we hope to work on. So, what is the challenge of string phenomenology? String theory has been around for quite a while now, and as various people have mentioned, it's about time that it go from inspiring new physics to produce concrete predictions and testable models. This is the goal. So in areas like cosmology and particle physics, we'd really like to be able to make string theory make contact with the real world. Whatever string theory produces in terms of a 4D effective theory, it has to agree with the physics we already see. It has to give us the particle spectra, particle behavior we already see. And we'd like it to have a minimal number of assumptions. We'd like it not to be too bizarre, though that is a very relative word in string theory. We'd like to be able to produce a supersymmetric version of the standard model from string theory. It's something called the holy grail of string phenomenology. So is there a string model that gives exactly the real world? We need things like gate unification, fermion masses, Yukawa things, etc. And lots of diverse work has been done on this, which I will not be able to discuss in detail. But major approaches to string phenomenology come from many aspects of string theory. Much impressive work has been done in intersecting brain models in type 2. Some work has been done in M-theory on G2 manifolds, which I also work on. And heterotic model building is the oldest approach to string phenomenology. It was started back in the day, right after the discovery of heterotic string, people realized that this could give something like the standard models in string theory. And all of them have their strong suits. However, one general feature of phenomenology in string theory, and I should say, by the way, in case anyone is actually a particle theorist here, that when I say phenomenology, I mean something sort of vaguely like phenomenology in string theory at the moment, as opposed to hardcore particle phenomenology that we're trying to get closer. So most approaches to phenomenology in string theory have limitations. As it is very obvious if you've ever looked at any of the stuff that people do in string phenomenology, in any type of string theory, it's very easy to come close to the real world. So generic type 2 intersecting brain models give you sort of, you know, the right kinds of symmetries, right sort of particle spectrum, you know, sort of. But it's very hard to get the details exactly right. So finding something that has exactly the spectra of the MSSM is extraordinarily difficult. Finding the right discrete symmetries, Yukawa films, fermion masses, is something that remains elusive. So some problems, a lot of constructions in type 2 and type 2 compactifications and G2 compactifications is that the extreme constructions rely on special points in moduli space and quite complicated constructions. These special points give you enhanced gauge groups and spectra that you want for extreme phenomenology. But it would be nice to have a model that generically did the right thing. Also, most constructions give you large numbers of exotic particles. You end up with particles with long quantum numbers, to be realistic, and lots of vector-like pairs. One side note here, in heterotic string theory, you get the right quantum numbers, which is a quirk. There's also the issue of moduli stabilization. You end up with way too many free moduli, and you don't know how to fix them. So being able to combine moduli stabilization techniques, such as flux, compactifications, etc., with whatever phenomenological approach you're taking is important. I'm going to talk today about heterotic model building. Despite being one of the oldest approaches, as I said, it's been around for over 20 years, it is still one of the most promising in some avenues. One of the main features is that gauge unification is automatic. You can automatically produce gut theories from heterotic models. Standard model families originate from an underlying spinner up of a gut group. So the standard gut symmetries that you can produce from heterotic models are B6, SO10, and C5. So a lot of generic strong suit G to heterotic model building. However, it's difficult. All approaches to string phenomenology are difficult, but heterotic string theory involves a lot of algebraic geometry. There is inherent mathematical difficulty in being able to actually construct the ingredients for your heterotic model, being able to define Calabi-Yau manifolds that you're going to compactify over, and bundles over those Calabi-Yaus is very difficult. And there's just computational difficulty, which I'll talk a little bit about in this talk, how do you actually get physical data out of the string model? So how do you take this abstract Calabi-Yau vector bundle, et cetera, and say this is going to be the real world when you're done? It turns out it's very difficult. So a very brief review of what a heterotic model is. You begin with the E8 cross E8 heterotic string dimensions. The standard way to do this is, I'll talk a little bit more about specifically what this looks like, but of these two E8s, one gives rise to a visible sector in which you're going to descend in the real world, so you're going to get gut symmetries living inside one of these E8s, and the other is a hidden sector, which for the most part you ignore because some approaches don't. You're going to take this 10D theory and compactify on a six-dimensional Calabi-Yau, six-real-dimensional, three-complex-dimensional Calabi-Yau threefold, which is going to give you, hopefully, an n equals 1 supersymmetric theory in 4D. You're also going to have a vector bundle on this Calabi-Yau with structure group, subgroup of E8, and this is going to break E8 to a low-energy gut theory. The weakly coupled theory has been studied since the 1980s. It was the first attempt at string phenomenology, and Dallas Horowitz, John and Jerry Witten realized in the early 80s that this was all going to work, that they could actually produce something like the standard model from string theory. And it was very exciting. Speaking to Ken Dallas, they actually thought they were going to get exactly the standard model sort of right away out of string theory. And that had been a disappointment that we still don't have it 20 years later. Soon after the discovery of E plus E8, they started trying to do string phenomenology. The strongly coupled theory is dual to M theory on a manifold boundary, and this has produced a lot of rich work descending from Parabola-Witten theory and theory compactifications. The Parabola-Witten picture, this is a diagram that I yanked from this paper, right? The Parabola-Witten picture is that you begin with M theory in 11D. You imagine compactifying this on an S1 mod set 2, which you can view either as a manifold with boundary or as an overfold with fixed points. At the overfold fixed points, you end up with enhanced gauge symmetries, E8 at each end of your S1. On one of these, you're going to try and build a real world. So one of these E8s becomes the fixed, and the other is going to be the hidden sector. The pictures, the little circles up at the top, are your Calabi-Yau unfolds, which you're going to wrap Wilson lines on to break those gut symmetries. So hopefully this picture is familiar.
But here, the family replication.
Sorry, family replication?
Yeah. How do you get it in the
heterotic model? I'll talk more about that in just a minute. Okay. So, the idea of my particular talk, what I'm going to be discussing today, is finding the correct vacua to model realistic particle physics is difficult. It's, at the beginning of the day, how do you know how you're going to get the detailed structure right when you're just beginning with a string theory in 10D? This is a difficult task. How are you going to design the right model? A lot of work has been done creating very detailed models, particularly work done by the group at UPenn and others. How do you design one model that gives you exactly the standard model, the MSSM? So one approach is to try and fine-tune such a model. The approach I want to talk about today is quite different. The approach I want to talk today is generically, what is heterotic string capable of? So is it possible to formulate an algorithmic and systematic search for the correct vacua that you're looking for over some very broad class of manifolds and bundles? So this is going to be using computational algebraic geometry. What I want to do is produce a computer database of thousands of Calabi-Yau spaces and their topological data. So I want to understand everything there is to know about these Calabi-Yaus. I want to find a well-defined set of vector bundles over them, and I hope to be able to scan through literally hundreds of billions of potential candidates, potential physical models, and see which ones are physically relevant. So the approach, the philosophy of this approach is, if heterotic model building is difficult, if it's difficult to see how you're going to produce fine-scale structures of standard models in string theory, you want to start with as big a framework as possible and be able to scan for desirable features. So, how many, if you can produce hundreds of billions of models, how many of them are close to nature? You'd like to begin with this vast class, and in the end, end up with only a few that you believe are physically relevant. And that's what happens. Okay, so first comment, the standard embedding. When heterotic models were first discovered, it was known that you needed a floppy owl. You needed a vector bundle over that floppy owl, and sort of the obvious vector bundle that's floating around is the tangent bundle. So the very first approach to string phenomenology was to take a floppy owl manifold, to take the tangent bundle of that floppy owl, and note that the tangent bundle is going to have S3 phenomenon. The string connection of the manifold becomes the connection of the vector bundle, and it has to satisfy the Hermitian Gay-Nos equations in order to have supersymmetric vector. F in this equation is going to be the gauge field change for the holomorphic vector bundle. This is a generalization of the Ricci flatness condition. This will give you an n equals 1 E6 supersymmetric gut in 4D, and the particle spectra are directly determined by the choice of Calabria. So this is sort of one stop, you get everything that you're looking for. Just figure Calabria out and then see what the physics is associated with it. Unfortunately, the physics isn't very good. But you pick your Calabria out, you pick the tangent bundle as the vector bundle over it. And first, E6 guts are, my phenomenological friends tell me, not terribly great. The starters, they're non-minimal. You're going to end up with XGB1s. The 27 of E6 gives you exotic matter. It'll decompose into a 16 plus a 10 plus 1. The 10 plus 1 give you exotic matter in E6 guts. The number of generations, it turns out, is given by C3 of the vector bundle, the topological data. And this, if you know you want exactly three generations, you have to find the right C3 to give this to you. And it turns out that this is not going to work. There are very few floppy outs that give you the right structure. So in the 80s, when they first tried to do this, they scanned over millions. I think they're on the order of 400 million known floppy outs. And they found very few. So we need to do something slightly more complicated. The general choice of vector bundle can be made. So instead of taking the tangent bundle, you can say, suppose I built some other vector bundle over this Calabria. The 4D structure group, in general, will be given by the commutant in E8. So if you want to end up with, say, an S10 model, you need to build a vector bundle over your Calabria that has SU4 as its structure group.
Isn't there a reason you take an SUN rather than UN?
Yes. So UNs in general will give you XGB1s, they'll be non-minimal. That is not necessarily a bad thing, and some people like Blumenhagen and co. in Munich are doing model building with U1s. So there are merits to that. And you can, those U1s tend to be anomalous, which can sometimes be cool. I think Arango is doing work on neutrino mixing and those anomalous U1s being useful. But for this approach, if you want to get, say, the MSSM, if you'd like standard model plus in 1D minus L, then you start with XMN bundles rather than UN. So the commutants of these with no activity ones, if you pick SV3 as the structure group of your vector bundle, you end up with an E6 model. If you end up with SV4, you get SF10, and SV5, the commutant in a E8 is SV5. So starting from your 10D string theory, you've picked a vector bundle, you've selected the structure group. The 248 of the 8 decomposes in the following way. And you expect to affect two stages in the rate. So if you end up with a gut theory, you have to be able to get the scattered model from that gut. You expect that this E8 has to break. So first step, break down from the gut, break the E8 to the gut proof. Second, you're going to need to break that gut separately, and there are a variety of approaches. One is Wilson lines. And tying into your question, Wilson lines are very good for SUN models. If you're doing UN models frequently, you can actually break the gut symmetry directly with the UN bundle.
So you want to break U1 T minus L eventually, right?
Yes. But for starters, Wilson lines are going to give you this. All right, so just to review, elements of the construction. To make a heterotic model and give yourself minus 40 physics, what do you need? You need to start with Calabria threefold. You need a holomorphic vector bundle satisfying your Hermitian Gay-Nos equations over that in order to have supersymmetry. The structure group has to be in E8, The commutant will give you your 4D effective theories symmetry. The, yeah, what I just said, the low energy 4D theory, explaining them about. You're going to need Wilson lines eventually if you begin with SUN bundles. You're going to need Wilson lines to break to something containing the MSSM. And in addition, you have, as we noticed in the Harada Witten picture, you have the option of including M5 rings into your solution. So these M5 rings can wrap a holomorphic effective two cycle, and this leads to an anomaly cancellation condition. So whatever vector bundle you're going to build, you want your theory to be anomaly free. This is a condition on the second term class of the tangent bundle C2 of X minus the second term class of the vector bundle has to be related to these effective cycles. And incidentally, this the right-hand side of this equation, the WM5, can also accommodate a hidden sector. So if you want to do stuff with this extra E8 floating around, you can also stick that condition in. Okay, and one other comment on this, sorry. C2 of the tangent bundle minus C2 of the bundle has to be related to this effective class. Numerically, what this ends up saying is the difference of these two trim classes has to be greater than or equal to zero for these models. All right. I want to talk about a very important aspect of these constructions, something called stability. I said that in order to have a well-defined theory that's going to give us supersymmetric fatua, we need to begin with something that will solve the Hermitian Yang-Mills equations. So this is a wickedly difficult set of equations to solve. Very hard analysis, and you can't solve it in general. Just like it's very hard to explicitly find a metric for a Flaviat space, very difficult problem. Fortunately, we are saved by the Donaldson-Uhlenbeck-Yau theorem, which says, on each stable holomorphic vector bundle, there will exist a Hermitian-Yang-Mills connection satisfying the equations. Sorry, Gibbs-Yang-Mills connection satisfying the Hermitian-Yang-Mills equation. So the word here is stable. There is some mathematical property of this vector bundle, which if you have it, then you get supersymmetry and everything's great. If you don't, then you're in trouble. So what does stability mean? Stability has to do with something called the slope of subsheaves of your vector bundle. If you're not familiar with either stability or sheaves, don't worry about it. But in general, there is something called the slope, which you can define for a vector bundle or a sheaf, this mu. It is a condition on the C1. A vector bundle is called stable if every subsheaf of the vector bundle, every subsheaf F, has a slope less than the vector bundle itself. Okay, we won't worry about too much what exactly this means, but there is an abstract algebraic geometry property that if this is satisfied, then we're going to get good physics. Incidentally, there is a less than equal to that's possible. This is actually semi-stability is sufficient for supersymmetry in 4D, but full stability is computationally useful. Okay, so a property of vector bundles called stability, which is going to give us good 4D physics. So we want a stable holomorphic vector bundle. For stable vector bundles, it turns out that there is a condition on the cohomology groups of that vector bundle. H0 of V and H0 of the dual bundle have to vanish if this is stable. So this is the statement that the bundle and its dual bundle have no sections. Okay. In general, if you begin with an SUN bundle, then the Ettinger index theorem gives you a nice set of constraints on the bundle cohomology. It tells you that, and I'll explain in a minute why we're interested in this topological data, but it turns out that if you have a stable bundle, then you have three families, which are going to be given by H1 of the vector bundle and H1 of V star. So you get straight to three families, you have good control of some of the topological data of the bundle. Unfortunately, this is an issue of conservation misery. So I said the Hermitian Yang-Mills equations were really hard to solve. Proving stability of the vector bundle is a very hard question in algebraic geometry as well, notoriously difficult. So we've changed an analysis question to one of algebra, but they're still difficult. And this is an ongoing area in algebraic geometry trying to understand stability of vector bundles. Okay, so why am I talking about cohomology of these vector bundles? In heterotic models, the 4D particle spectra is determined by bundle cohomology. So the lower energy particles are associated with massless nodes of the Dirac operator. And it turns out, through a long explanation that I'm not going to get into, that these massless nodes are in direct one-to-one correspondence with bundle value cohomology groups. So your spec rate is directly determined by the topological data of your bundle. The decomposition goes in the following way. For each of your bets in the trees, you can look in this table and read off which bundle cohomology group you need to compute in order to actually tell what's going to happen. So for example, in an SO4 theory, SV4, SO10 theory, the number of pigs is going to be in the N10. So if you want to know how many pigs Douglas probably is going to have, you need to compute H1 of which two would be in order to see. So you need to know the topological data of the bundle, and this will tell you what your particle spectra looks like. So most work in heterotic model building has to do with getting these numbers right, getting something that looks like the real world. So final comment, you need to compute topological data, bundle cohomologies, in order to proceed. All right, getting back to my plan, the general construction you want to do, I want to build realistic 4D physics. I need to begin with some large class of Calabi-Yau manifolds on the assumption that it's going to be hard for me to spot the right model, particularly detailed structure of the right model. So when I talk to my phenomenological friends, they tell me about very fine structure, discrete symmetries, and particularly textures and neutral couplings, things that are hard for string theorists to begin to visualize rather than do down. So this is going to be difficult. We want to start with a lot of models so we can start weeding them out for physical properties. We're going to begin with a particular class of Calabi-Yau manifolds that I'm going to describe. These are something called CCs, complete intersection Calabi-Yau manifolds, and something called the monad construction, which I'll also describe. So we need large class of Calabi-Yaus and vector bundles. We require an explicit construction, so we need to be able to actually handle these vector bundles, to actually compute their topological data. And we need it to be compatible with the two-step symmetry breaking. So we need to be able to, at the end of the day, impose Wilson lines and other features in order to break symmetry. These particular type of Calabi-Yaus, the complete intersections, are the simplest and one of the original Calabi-Yau constructions, one of the first that was come up with. They're very explicit, and one of the big perks, they're relatively easy to find discrete symmetries in Wilson line field. So for people that have looked at this before, actually constructing Wilson lines on Calabi-Yaus can be difficult. So these are well suited for the job. And we'd like computer addressability. I want to make millions of models. I want to be able to scan them for the real world. And I can't do it by hand. So I need to be able to find some sort of algorithmic approach to solving this problem that makes good use of existing technology and can do the computational algebraic geometry. And teaching computers to do this sort of geometry is hard. There are some packages in existence. It's called Macaulay and Singular, which are both very useful for this, but most of this had to be done actually just by writing C code to do this. So, very brief technical slide, what am I actually going to do? I'm going to use causal and array sequences to compute bundle cohomology. I need to be able to check bundle stability. I'll discuss that more in a minute. I want to scan millions of bundles for physical suitability, and I want to see what the answer is. Is the real world something generic in heterotic string theory? You find lots and lots of models that all look exactly like the real world. Or does it turn out to be very hard to get something realistic from heterotic models? Okay, briefly let me describe what I mean by these Calabi-Yaus. The nice thing about complete intersection of Calabi-Yaus is they're much more intuitive to grasp than most. You begin with projective space, so a product of projective spaces, actually. Straight up projective space. You're going to add defining polynomials, k of them, and these are going to be polynomials in each of the xi here, our projective coordinates. You're going to add polynomial constraints. So the word complete intersection means that the Calabi-Yau itself is going to be formed as a complete intersection of hypersurfaces defined by polynomial constraints in Pn. And the way that you're going to write this is as a configuration matrix. So this is a set of integers in a matrix, which tells you which polynomial constraints and which PNs all are going to add up together to make a Calabi-Yau. So quite a simple, this is just like imagining intersection surfaces in Rn. This is a very simple construction. Specifically, I'm going to be interested in a particular subset of these called favorable complete intersection Calabi-Yaus. And those are for which the Hodge number H11 is equal to the number of embedding PNs. And this has to do with halo forms on these spaces. So as you probably know, Kayla Coleman thought the atoms very important for determining the whole structure of theory, including its moduli. And we like, because this is a very simple construction, we like the Kayla forms on the Clavier to descend from the ambient space. So you have some nice Kayla forms handed to you at the end, you'd like those to restrict in a nice way. And for some of these Claviers, they do. So you don't get any extra Kayla forms, just those that come from the end. The classic example of such a space, the easiest one anyone can think of, is a Quincy Piper surface in P4. So this configuration matrix, 4 is telling you you're in P4. 5 is telling you the degree of the polynomial that you're looking at. So one hypersurface, polynomial hypersurface. And this is called a cyclic Clavier. Cyclic has to do with hard group. So it's the hard group in Z, which another way of saying it is there is exactly one Kayla form. So there is one J that you're going to work with, not a whole lot. Okay. So those are the Clavier I'm going to work with. I also need a notion of line bundles over those Claviers. And I'll explain in just a second why we're looking at this. But it's possible to write down line bundles on Pn. These can be written as O of K, where K is the kth power of the hyperplane bundle. So a hyperplane bundle, if you take a constraint, one constraint in Pn, this gives you a hypersurface, so some surface that's 1 degree down. And if you look at a point and you say, what is every hypersurface that goes through this point? If you take the bundle of all of those, that's the hyperplane bundle. It's a line bundle. And so O1 is the hyperplane bundle. OK is the kth tensor power of it. By definition, OK is the line bundle whose first term class is K. So I apologize for if I'm boring you with this, but when you see OK, just think there's some line bundle, and it has a first term class that is this integer K. Incidentally, line bundles on the Clavier are classified by the first term class. So if you know this bit of topological data, then you know which line bundle you're working with. So similarly, on a product of projective space, you can write down a vector that has a series of integers which tells you which line bundle you're considering. And the Kodaro-Banachian theorem is something, thanks there, it tells you something about the cohomology of such line bundles. It tells you that the cohomology is actually very simple. If this string of integers that I'm writing, which is defining polynomials of certain degrees in Pn, if all those integers are strictly greater than 0, then this is called a positive line bundle, and it has only H0 as the non-vanishing cohomology. My apologies if that would help, but here's why we needed to do that. I said that I'm going to construct vector bundles in a systematic way. So I want to do something called the monad construction of vector bundles. This has been around in the mathematics literature for quite a long time. It's behind the AVHM construction of instantons. Anyone who doesn't do this, this is how the mathematicians think of it. So what exactly is a monad? A monad is a sequence of vector bundles or vector spaces, which is short exact. So I have the string VBC up here. V is a vector bundle, B is a vector bundle, C is a vector bundle. Series of vector bundles map between them. When I say short exact sequence, it means that there's a relationship between the two maps in the sequence. The kernel of G has to be the image of L. And if you write this down, it turns out that writing a string like this, with this condition on the kernel and image of these maps, that the vector bundle V can be defined as the kernel of the map G, and its rank will be given by the difference of the two other vector bundles on the end. Okay, why are we doing this? I want to build a vector bundle. Turns out that if I write down a sequence like this, I can build a vector bundle by taking two other vector bundles and sticking them in a sequence with some maps between them. Okay? Well, I want to do this systematically. What simple vector bundles do I know? Well, the simplest possible vector bundles are line bundles. So if you make B and C direct sums of line bundles, write them in a sequence like this, you can build a vector bundle, which is not a line bundle, it can be of arbitrary range. You can build a vector bundle out of line bundles. So from a mathematician's point of view, this is actually the nicest way to define a vector bundle. Seems strange to physicists, but viewing a vector bundle as the kernel of a map is quite nice. So, monad construction says you take this sequence, you're going to pick some line bundles, your favorite ones. You are then going to define polynomial maps between them. And the map, if I pick, get my hockey stick here. If these are my two sums of line bundles, so just the very simple bundles on Pn or product of Pn's, if I pick B and C like so, then the map can be written as a matrix of polynomials. Polynomials in these Pn's that I'm working with. So for example, on Pn, the ijth component of a map G, which is a matrix, will be a homogeneous polynomial of degree given by a particular line bundles that I'm considering. So these line bundles have to do with, one other comment. A line bundle, when you see O of D, this means a line bundle whose sections are polynomials of that degree. So for example, O5 means you're looking at quintic polynomial sections on Pn. So if you pick line bundles, write them in a sequence, you can define vector bundles. Why is this a good thing? Well, it's a good thing because line bundles are easy to come by. You can stick any integers you want into these O's. So pick any first string classes for these line bundles. And by writing them in such a sequence and changing which line bundles you pick, you can construct lots and lots of different vector bundles. For example, to give you an idea of the power of this construction, every bundle on Pn can be written this way. So by picking line bundles and writing them in monad, in a short exact sequence of this form, you can describe every bundle. There is actually a belief among algebraic geometers that every bundle on a projective variety can be written this way. And this would mean, for example, the Laplacians I'm considering, which are hypersurfaces in Pn, that would mean every vector bundle on those Laplacians could be written in this way. And that would be a powerful statement indeed, because that would say we actually have a way of scanning over every possible vector bundle on this Laplacian and seeing whether any of them look like the real world. So what should you remember? You should remember from this that you define a vector bundle by picking some line bundles and writing them in a sequence. Okay, this is going to be the game from here on out. I said that I want to start with this class of well-defined.
How hard is it to find G? In order to get V, you've got to know what G is to get the kernel, right?
Right. So
how hard is it to actually in practice? It says you can write it as a matrix of polynomials, but how hard is it
to find it? That's an excellent question. What you do in practice is you don't pick G. You leave it generic. As a matter of fact, everything I'm going to try and discuss is going to hold true for generic polynomials. Now, what do I mean by a generic polynomial? I mean the entries don't have too many zeros. So for example, if I have five coordinates and I want to make a order four polynomial, right? You can imagine writing down the most general order four polynomial in those five coordinates. So, you know, 4 times x1, x2, x3, x4, etc. And you can imagine writing something down. For example, if I have five coordinates and I write down x1 to the fourth, that is not a generic polynomial. So if you write down something pretty generic, it turns out that the topological data bundle are the same. So you try and not imagine what this is. You imagine sort of the large scale of what's going to happen. And most of the time, the choice of map doesn't matter. Occasionally it will, and I'll discuss how you then actually pick specific polynomials for those cases. But for most of what I want to do, G is going to be the most generic map. So in other words, pick your favorite, as long as it's not too special. Okay, physical constraints. I want to begin with this vast series of bundles. Right? Let me back up one slide and just mention. At this level, the integers, so here are these B's and C's, these guys, are matrices, and they can be any. So any integers I want in a matrix of a particular size. So integer integers. This series of the vector bundles I can define is definitely unbounded from the starting point. But I need to impose physical constraints because I want to do string theory and I want to get to the real world. For starters, I'm going to pick SUN bundles. As I've already stressed, this is a choice. One could pick UN bundles, but to start with, let's pick SUN. I'm going to impose the anomaly cancellation condition on the data for five brains that relates C2 of the tangent bundle. So anomaly cancellation is making sure that the manifold and the vector bundle play nicely together. I'm going to require a condition on the index of the bundle, C3 of the bundle, which is that it is a multiple of 3. This is because the index gets divided by 3 under Wilson line action. Gets divided by some integer under Wilson line action, and I want at the end of the day to end up with 3 generations of particles. So in order to do this, I need to begin with some multiple of 3, and then divide by the discrete symmetry under Wilson line to get exactly 3 generations. I need these vector bundles to be stable, because I want supersymmetry. And I need the monads to actually define bundles. This is a technical point, but the short exact sequence that I wrote down of vector bundles does not actually give you a bundle. It can give you a shape, which is a slightly more general mathematical object. So there's some mathematical finery related to actually getting the vector bundle that you want at the end of the day. All right, so I have these physical constraints. And note, sorry for jumping back and forth here, but this is a fairly coarse initial scan, right? I just want anomaly-free bundles. I want them to possibly give three generations of particles. I want them to give supersymmetry, and I want them to be well-defined. So I'm starting out quite general at the beginning, and hopefully we'll add more constraints to get exactly the real world. But first, with this rather coarse initial strike through, can I classify such bundles? Can I use this powerful monad construction to actually be able to say which, how many physical bundles there are? So the physical and mathematical constraints can be written as constraints on these line bundles. I'm picking line bundles to define my vector bundle. Once again, I can show the exact sequence. So is this a finite class? Is it infinite? What are the properties of the bundles defined by these constraints? This turns out to be a problem in number theory. Quite a nasty one, actually. But you have to pick some integers to put into these defining line bundles. And you can write down those physical constraints in the following way. Turns out that first, there's a relationship between the two sets of line bundles you're picking in order for it to be a well-defined bundle. As we just discussed, the map G can be taken to be generic, so you don't have to pick the exact map. As long as short exactness, that this kernel image relationship between the two maps is okay. Yes?
I'm lost a little bit. So are you curious even projective spaces, or it's general?
Excellent question. I can actually do this either way. I can define the monad, so everything I said so far is general. Actually, right. So this short exact sequence of vector bundles can be defined.
But when you write B this way, you're assuming projective space.
When I write the bundles, this actually is generic. If I write B and C in this way, I can mean the bundles whose first string classes are given by those integers. Those could actually be on any space. So you can have any space with line bundles and you can do this construction. For what I'm doing, it will be projective space or hypersurfaces in projective space. But in general, this construction works over anything, which is nice. There are two different ways that I'm going to go about this. You could actually define that sequence on projective space and then restrict down to the Calabi-Yau hypersurface. So define the bundle upstairs, pull it down to your subspace. Or you can define the bundle directly on the subspace. And those two things don't actually have to be the same procedure, but it comes out in the space that they are, which gives you a lot of flexibility. You can actually, it has to do with the Calabi-Yau that you picked, but you can pull things up and down as you see. Okay. So the map.
Your B's and C's are positive, or?
Excellent question. So far, I haven't said. They're going to be generic, but it turns out they will be positive for the most part, yes.
I'm sorry, I'm still a little confused as to what exactly it means for the map to be generic.
Mm-hmm.
Can that be, say, like, given the representation as a matrix of polynomials, can you express that as some condition on the matrix, or?
Yes, actually. There is a lot of work done. I don't remember the name of the guys. It has to do with something called the degeneracy locus of the map of polynomials. And there's a lot of work that has been done by Lazarfeld and Holtman on when those generic polynomial maps, so what generic actually means for a map of polynomials, and where the thing that will cause you problems is if the polynomial map has too many zeros, and those relate to the zeros of the defining Calabi-Yau. So your Calabi-Yau is defined by some polynomials, your map is defined by some polynomials. And if those zeros coincide too much, then you can break down and get into problems. So there is some finery that I'm sweeping under the book. But you can take my word for it that we thought about that, and we know what generic is, and we're picking some generic maps. C1 is, this C1 condition is guaranteeing that the bundle is SUN. C1 relates to a condition on these BC line bundles that has to be satisfied. Anomaly cancellation, requiring that the difference between the tangent bundle, C2 of the tangent bundle, and C2 of the bundle is greater than zero, gives you another condition. So you have C2, topological data for your bundle. And this is related to, again, these BC integers being greater than zero. And finally, C3, requiring multiples of two generations, also gives you a condition on C3, And stability produces more complicated constraints on the relative signs of these two models. So I have some well-defined number theory problem. At the moment, B and C are generic maps of polynomials. Sorry, generic polynomials, matrices of polynomials. And I have this set of physical constraints. Is this a bounded problem? Which entries can I stick in these matrices that will do what I want? And it turns out that yes, it is.
I'm confused again. So for a given space, C3 should be a given multiple of 3, right?
C3 of, all right, sorry. For a given space, the difference between C2...
No, I'm asking about
C3, gotcha. For C3, it has to be a multiple of 3, integer multiple of 3.
Right, but it should be a given multiple.
Yes.
Of space.
Yes. At the moment, we're actually scanning for all multiples of 3, so any multiple will do. And then when we actually impose discrete symmetries, we're going to only pick those symmetries which correspond to the Calabi. It turns out there are, for this construction of Calabi as well as for the torque, there's quite a lot of discrete symmetries that you can work with. So you want to keep it fairly general at the moment, because you haven't necessarily picked what your Wilson lines are going to look like. Sorry, before I keep going, is everyone relatively OK with this idea? Okay, I need to mention one other point here. Stability, proving that these give supersymmetric models, is very difficult. And there is a condition, we don't even have to read this slide carefully, but there is a condition for manifolds on projective manifolds with only one Kähler form, which has to do with cohomology of the bundle. And it is a condition. If this condition is satisfied, then the vector bundle is stable. And this is quite a powerful condition, and we're going to use this criterion and generalizations of it to prove that vector bundles are stable. So, yeah. Let me just warm up for a second. Take mathematical technology for a test drive. I want to do this complicated procedure where I take products of projective space, I take polynomials in them to define some Calabi-Yau's, and I'm going to then define short exact sequences with fine bundles over those. The simplest conceivable way I could do this is to begin with 5 Calabi-Yau's that are defined as some polynomials in one projective space. And there are only 5 of such. They're called cyclic Calabi-Yau's. The simplest is the quintic, and it has cousins, 4 cousins. These are the simplest possible Calabi-Yau's, and those are the ones we'll begin with first. So let's just take 5 simple Calabi-Yau's and say, what's the physics? What happens? Turns out we can find a complete classification of all physical monad bundles on these spaces. And demanding that the bundles are SUN and anomaly free is enough to bound the problem. So you begin with this infinite class of bundles, you find a finite class, and a finite class. At the end of the day, you find that only 37 bundles are even vaguely physical over these 5 Calabi-Yau's, which is kind of interesting. So for these cyclic, it turns out that the 5 most simple Calabi-Yau's, you can only have positive entries in those BC maps in order for it to be physical. If they are less than or equal to 0, the bundle is automatically unstable. We can compute the full spectra of these bundles using exaction spectral sequences. So for this case, the reason I mention this is that in general, the mathematical packages available for computer fall apart when you get to more complicated Calabi-Yau's, but we can check our existing technology using a lot of different means for these 5 simple ones. We find that we can compute the full spectrum, so we know exactly what the spectrum of these bundles are. We can see if it matches, say, the spectrum of the MSSM. We find no anti-generations, which is a nice feature. So this limits the exotic particles. Turns out that, as people were asking about earlier, what about this map? It turns out that the Higgs content is actually dependent on the choice of map. So all the other data isn't. And you can just compute for generic maps what that is. So the map, the Higgs content, is actually dependent on where you are in the moduli space of possible maps. And using this criterion that I blasted through quickly, you can prove that all such bundles are stable. So I'm saying this all very quickly, but this is actually quite a complicated problem in algebraic geometry. Proving that these bundles are stable was a big thing. So let me just give you an example of what this looks like. If I pick a vector bundle by the following sequence, so I write down a V, I'm picking the hyperplane bundle itself, O1, so the bundle whose first string class is 1, for the 7 power means I'm taking a direct sum. So 7 copies of O1, mapping into O3 and O2 from the second. This means that my polynomial map will have, 7 components this way and 5 this way. 3 this way. This is a rank 4 vector bundle on the FinFig. It's an SU4 bundle. And it turns out that you can compute its third term class, which is 30. So you would want a Z5 plus Z5 symmetry for all some lines in order to get down into the standard model. And you can compute the full spectra. The number of things is dependent on that. So this is,
So this, the choice of this place, is it somewhere in the sequence or you have to?
That's a separate thing. The monad you can define over any space, but the actual topological data depends on the space.
So you fix the space and the sequence.
Fix the space and the sequence, compute polynomial, and you've got a model. You've got something you can ask. Okay, these are 2 quick slides just giving you a list. This is every physical bundle on the manifold 533. And these are all the physical bundles, so choices of integers on the quintic, which is a pretty slide just showing you. Okay, so Higgs at special points. This is something that has happened in other areas of heterodox literature called the jumping phenomenon. The pen group looking at SU5 bundles ran into the same sort of thing. Specifically, let's take an example. Suppose I take an SU4 bundle defined by the short exact sequence of line bundles. It turns out that generically, so if I pick your average set of polynomials, I have no Higgs in the model, which is clearly bad. I would like some Higgs. So in this case, we have to actually make more intelligent choices of the maps of polynomials. For example, this one will actually give you Higgs. Turns out it gives you 13 Higgs doublets, which is not so great, but you can pick and find different things depending on the map. Okay. Let's now extend this. So I've talked about the technique. I've talked about the manifolds and the bundles. Now I want to do this on a bigger scale. So I talked about 5 manifolds, 5 cyclic Calabi-Yaus. Now I'm going to see if I can extend this to 7,000 complete intersection Calabi-Yaus.
Now, in the previous slide, is there a way of computerizing the search for Higgs?
Yes. Actually, in this case, for the 5 cyclic manifolds we were looking at, the program called Macaulay, the computational algebraic geometry package, can solve for these polynomial maps directly. So you can actually ask it to find which maps will give you Higgs of a particular size. In general, the problem is,
So keen is an output, so you cannot ask the program to find you, a map with one here.
You sort of can. It's a bit complicated in how you're actually going to set it up, but you can teach it how to scan through sort of classes of polynomial entries and then see what the outputs are and select for the ones you know.
Well, so I guess the coefficients of these polynomials are like from bundle modulus, right?
Yes.
And so I guess this program, can write some kind of equation in terms of these coefficients, so that when you stay along the locus of this equation, it gives you a certain number of pieces.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I should point out, this only works for very simple Calabi-Yaus. Fortunately, for the more general Calabi-Yaus, we actually do have Higgs generically, so we don't have to get into these details. But for some, you do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is the punchline, since I'm nearly out of time here? I'm going to go through this last bit quickly. For positive monads, if you restrict these line bundles to have strictly greater than 0 entries, you can do this for 7,000 Calabi-Yaus. You can do this construction and ask, what's the physics? What do you get? It turns out generically that the class is still bound. The class of bundles is still finite. So you have a bounded class of physical bundles, and they can be classified. Over the HCCs, we find thousands of bundles. Actually, for the total spectra of Calabi-Yaus, we find far fewer than you expect. We only find on the order of about 10,000 bundles for 7,000 spaces. So not the ratio of models that are actually physical. They all have no anti-generations, which is cool. Unfortunately, they're limited by Wilson lines and discrete symmetries. This anomaly, so the C3 we were talking about further, the anomaly cancellation has bounded them. Now you want to select the numbers of generations. Turns out that in order to produce exactly three generations, you need to divide by discrete symmetry of a particular size. And discrete symmetries are relatively easy to come by if they're small. But if you get really big integer multiples of three, then it's hopeless. So it turns out that the 37 monads on the five simplest layouts actually give you the smallest C3. So those five very simple examples give you something that is, in some sense, the most reasonable. This is just a plot. This is positive monads. So I'm plotting C3 and the number of bundles that have a C3 of that particular value. And the only thing I want to point out is, as you can see at the far right end of the spectrum, these are small C3s. There isn't much in terms of bundles down there. Most of them have quite big C3s of, you know, in the neighborhood of 150, which is not physically very great because it's hard to find discrete symmetries that will do what you want. So we need to extend the search. We had positive bundles over the set of 7,000 manifolds. Since they are restricted by the choice of Wilson lines, we want to do this as an algorithmic scan, we need to expand things a bit. And it turns out that all you have to do to expand things quite significantly is add zeros into those lists of line bundles. So an O of 0 is called structure sheet of a manifold. It's a very standard line bundle. If you allow that into the problem, it turns out it's actually unbounded. So you no longer have a finite class of bundles. You can easily produce infinite bundles. For example, this one, so picking this set and B and C, this parameter T, for any choice of T, this will give me a well-defined vector bundle. It turns out that there are some sneaky things going on, though, because these vector bundles are not all distinct. For example, for every value of T, this vector bundle gives you the same topological data. Every different bundle has the same topological data. So in terms of the physics, the problem is actually still bounded, even though the construction is infinite. And it turns out these are much harder, and we're proving stability on these. Nearly out of time. So one comment on the distributions. This was just a very small sample, but notice the distributions have now been shifted substantially to the right. So you have a lot more bundles that have quite low C3s. These are going to be more suitable for Wilson lines and breaking your gut symmetry. All right, what is the algorithmic approach? We successfully constructed a large class of vector bundles. How large? Well, if you add zero entries, it's potentially unbounded. And in point of fact, actually, we can produce, in terms of the data that we can store and scan, hundreds of millions of bundles over cloud VLs. Previous attempts have been made to create classes of vector bundles. However, this is the first effort on this scale. And if the results that we are looking at in algebraic geometry are correct, this might actually be able to be ultimately a complete classification of vector bundles over these particular cloud VLs. We've addressed the issue of stability, which is a very difficult one mathematically. And we're finding some physical bundles. So far, we've only been scanning for higher level physical constraints. So as you can see, the list of constraints that I started out with was quite generic. I haven't imposed detailed structure. And we're now ready to impose. We have a database. We have the bundles. We have the manifolds. We can now start to impose more detailed structure, break the gut groups with Wilson lines, classify discrete symmetries, etc. And we're only at the beginning. We want to be able to extend the techniques that we're working on to over 473 million for cloud VLs. This is in process. And these are pretty much all known cloud VLs. If we can do this, we could classify pretty much what's happening with toric compactifications. We've developed a lot of computational analysis to do this. And ultimately, we want to get real world. We'd like to get Yukawa couplings, Fermion masses, and be able to say that we can understand for these one class of string theories whether these are physical models or not. And I will stop there, just fairly on time. I'll pause here. I have some more I could talk about later. Thank you.
If you, you've restricted to three generations, but it's still barely conceivable there are four.
Yes.
So
we have the capacity to scan for any number of generations. So we have this list of bundles. If you scan for four, it'll still be a finite problem. You'll still find.
But you haven't done that.
No, so the list, well, we have the capacity to do that, but we have, for the data we've actually stored in many megabytes, we're only storing two generations.
So kind of touching on what you just said, you know, suppose you loosen that restriction a little bit and you were interested in models where C3 was, or construction vector bundles where C3 is a multiple of say 3, 4, or 5. Is there anything special about 3 relative to those other numbers that makes the problem computation more difficult, or is it basically the same problem for any?
Pretty much the same problem. The numbers, we've got about 26% of the models that we're looking at have C3 equal to 3. It's kind of a higher percentage than you might expect. It's not a totally uniform distribution, but in general, the problem is computationally the same for any number of generations.
More questions? Thanks, thank you, speaker.